a shift in the corner office, a CEO transition, it's maybe the biggest internal shockwave an organization can really absorb, right?
Definitely.
That memo drops, the name's out there, and suddenly the whole kind of social contract feels like it's been reset. It's not just about strategy changing, it's about trust. And, well, for a lot of employees, it's deep anxiety.
The huge amount of anxiety.
So the real question we need to dig into today isn't just who's the new leader, but maybe more importantly, what does this shift mean for the, you know, the basic culture of the business?
Exactly, the feel of the place.
We're going deep today into how these leadership handoffs hit those three critical internal things: psychological safety, productivity, and accountability.
The big three.
And our mission here really is to use the Peer Innovation Framework, which focuses on peer-driven performance, to pull out some actual practical strategies. So if you're leading a team through this kind of thing, or maybe you just want a clearer picture of what makes a good handoff work, this is for you.
And we really have to start with the danger zone, which is almost always psychological safety.
Always the first thing.
Yeah, that bedrock belief that you can speak up, that you can challenge things, maybe even fail sometimes without getting punished. That's often the first casualty when leadership changes.
Right.
When the rules seem to shift or nobody even says what the new rules are, the whole foundation just starts shaking violently sometimes.
And it's usually not deliberate malice, is it, from the new leader?
No, rarely. It's more often just the absence of clarity, that void, that vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
It just instantly fills up with rumors, speculation, and frankly, fear.
Yeah.
If people don't know where the new sort of political landmines are, they stop moving, they stop talking, they disengage.
Okay, so let's unpack that fear a bit more. We talk high-level strategy.
Yeah.
What about those like low-grade anxieties that really shake up even good teams? What's that internal monologue sound like for someone, a solid performer, when the CEO changes? It's not really about the share price for them, is it? It's personal.
Oh, absolutely personal.
We found three core questions that seem to pop up almost immediately. First one, will the new CEO actually value what I've been doing?
Mm.
You know, the contributions I've been making.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like realizing the special currency you've been earning for years might suddenly be worthless.
Exactly right. Your past wins might feel totally irrelevant overnight. And that just kills your sense of professional safety, doesn't it?
Instantly. Okay, second anxiety. Intellectual risk. Is it still okay to, you know, disagree or push an innovative idea that maybe challenges the new direction?
Yeah, that's a big one.
Because if the new leader comes in strong with a really firm mandate, people just clam up, don't they? They worry they'll look resistant.
Yeah.
Or worse, disloyal.
Precisely. Innovation just stalls.
And the third question, maybe the most disruptive, what changes are actually coming? Strategy, structure, people, fast. And crucially, how close are they going to get to me?
Right. That uncertainty about structural shifts, layoffs, reorgs, it just paralyzes decision-making everywhere, which is kind of where this peer innovation idea gives us a useful lens.
Okay, peer innovation. You mentioned it's the core of our analysis. It's about groups hitting peak performance using peer dynamics.
Wow.
But for listeners maybe new to this, what exactly are we talking about? Can you break it down a bit?
Sure. Peer innovation isn't just, you know, let's all work together. It's a more structured way of using peer accountability and transparency to keep performance high, especially when things are chaotic upstairs, like during a CEO change.
Okay.
It basically says success hangs on managing three key forces: safety, productivity, and accountability, all at the same time. They're interdependent.
Like a three-legged stool you mentioned earlier.
Exactly, that metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah.
If one leg gets wobbly, the whole thing tips over. Psychological safety has to come first. Without that, people won't take risks, so productivity dips.
Makes sense.
And if you don't have safety or decent output, then accountability, that third leg, gets completely misunderstood. It feels like blame, not responsibility.
So if safety is the absolute must-have, what happens to the whole system if a new CEO, even accidentally, undermines that foundation right out of the gate?
Well, you see what some call a flight to mediocrity. People stop aiming high and start trying to just be invisible.
Lay low.
Exactly. They do only what they're explicitly told, minimize all risk. The new leader needs to get that their first actions aren't really about strategy announcements. They're about cultural reassurance or restoration, even.
Okay. So if those three forces, safety, productivity, accountability, are being tested, the new CEO can't just walk in and dictate. their first moves have to directly stabilize those things. Our sources give three specific tactics for those first, say, 90 days drawing from peer innovation.
Right, practical steps.
The first strategy is about tactful listening, and this hits psychological safety head on. Strategy one, listen before leading. We all expect the new CEO to have the big plan, right? But the research stresses validation has to come before direction.
And it needs to be structured listening, not just a few big town halls where maybe only the loudest voices get heard.
Okay, so what does structured listening look like?
Effective ways include confidential one-on-ones, maybe small group sessions with a real mix of people, including those not in management roles. You need to hear the early warnings on cultural issues.
Find the fault lines.
Exactly. This shows you value their input. It signals, I need to understand your reality before I start changing things. That kind of respect is huge for preserving safety right away.
Okay. Strategy one, listen first. Now moving to the second force, accountability. This is often where transitions get toxic, isn't it? Because expectations are suddenly muddy.
Yeah, it can get very messy.
So strategy two is reframe accountability as shared responsibility.
This is a really crucial shift, both in language and in mindset. If a new CEO just imposes rigid individual KPIs from the top down before building any trust,
then accountability feels like blame.
Immediately. It feels punitive. The Peer Innovation Way insists accountability should be framed around collaboration and mutual support. It lowers that threat perception.
Okay, I get the theory. Shared responsibility sounds good, but does it risk becoming, you know, shared anonymity if something goes wrong? How do you keep real hard accountability in that kind of collaborative setup?
Yeah, that's the balancing act, isn't it? It's managed by focusing maybe more on process accountability, not just the final outcome.
How so?
Well, did the team actually follow the process they agreed on? Did they communicate openly when things got tough? Was there honesty? Accountability isn't about never failing. It's about owning the collective effort, learning together from what happened. That keeps standards high without making everyone run for cover.
Right. Owning the effort, not just the result. I like that. Okay. And finally, strategy three. This links to keeping productivity going and also continuity. The CEO must connect to the organization's story.
Yes. This is vital.
Because transitions make people feel adrift, right? Like the company's past, maybe the last 5, 10 years, suddenly doesn't count anymore.
That's exactly the feeling. So this is about providing an anchor. The CEO needs to clearly show how the future path connects to the company's existing mission, its core values.
So it's not about erasing history.
No, definitely not. It's about saying, we're building the next chapter on top of this strong foundation. That message gives people a sense of continuity, it reinforces community, and it lets productivity keep going because people understand their work still fits into a larger ongoing story. It hasn't just vanished.
This roadmap for the CEO is really helpful. But what's striking here, and maybe counterintuitive, is how much we focus on the individual leader when you're saying transitions really succeed or fail down at the team level with the peers.
Precisely. You know, Peter Senge defined leadership, and I love this quote, as the capacity of a human community to shape its future.
A human community, not just one person.
Right. Big things get done by groups, by collectives. And since teams are where the actual work happens day to day, they're also the first line of defense against all that fear and uncertainty we talked about.
So teams act like psychological shock absorbers. That's a great phrase.
That's exactly it.
The CEO sends down the big strategy, maybe some disruptive news, but the team kind of cushions the blow. How are peers better at this than, say, formal memos or manager updates?
Well, because trust is fundamentally local, isn't it? When the big company-wide norms feel shaky, your local norms, your team norms become incredibly important. Your immediate peer group is that familiar space where trust, hopefully, already exists, regardless of who's upstairs.
Okay.
The sources point to three really critical functions these peer teams provide during transitions.
What are they?
Okay, first, they provide context. Leadership messages, especially during changes, can be full of jargon, right? Broad statements like synergy or optimization.
Yeah, corporate speak.
Exactly. The peer group takes that stuff and translates it. What does this actually mean for us, for our work, like this afternoon? They make it real.
That translation piece is crucial, turning abstract strategy into something tangible and hopefully less scary.
Mm-hmm. Second function, they offer stability. The team itself, just the structure and the familiar faces, provides continuity when everything else feels like it's changing.
Right, the known environment.
You know the norms within your team. You know who you trust, how you communicate. That shared experience is incredibly stabilizing, even if the wider organization feels chaotic.
Okay, context and stability. What's the third?
The third is voice. In a really turbulent time, people might not feel safe speaking up directly to a new boss or even their existing one if things feel precarious.
Understandable.
Peer groups can amplify those individual concerns. They can synthesize shared worries into a collective message that feels less threatening to deliver upwards. It's a way for authentic feedback to actually reach the new CEO or senior leaders. They act as a vital feedback loop, which, again, is crucial for safety.
Context, stability, voice. You can really see how that peer level becomes so important.
Right.
And the contrast this creates between organizations must be pretty stark.
Oh, absolutely.
Our sources talk about companies that handle handoffs smoothly, often, because they already have strong peer accountability and safety built in.
Yes, the infrastructure is already there.
Versus those without it. And what happens there?
Well, without that peer power, you see exactly what you expect. Morale plummets, good people start leaving, spikes in attrition, and you get real resistance to new plans because the fear just isn't being managed or absorbed anywhere.
So the lesson is really clear. The CEO cannot and should not try to carry the weight of a transition all alone. It's fundamentally a collective experience.
Absolutely. It has to be. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, you know, for boards, for senior leaders planning succession, the focus can't only be on who the next CEO is. It has to be just as much on how the transition process itself will safeguard employee psychological safety, maybe by actively strengthening that peer infrastructure beforehand.
Right. So thinking about our listener, what's the main takeaway here? It seems the core finding is that a CEO change shouldn't just be seen as this dangerous period to get through. It could actually be an opportunity for positive transformation if you stabilize those three pillars: safety, productivity, accountability.
Yes, precisely. Boards and leaders should consciously use transitions to strengthen the culture. You do that by first, reaffirming safety, making sure voices count. Second, inspiring productivity by framing change as a catalyst, something exciting, not just disruptive. And third, clarifying accountability so expectations feel empowering, not like a threat.
It really shifts the perspective on what a CEO's legacy is, doesn't it? It's not just the strategy they launch or the numbers they hit. It's also about the level of trust and safety they fostered and the people who have to keep things going and who will eventually pass the baton themselves someday.
Well said. It's about the human capacity they build or preserve.
So we'll leave you, our listener, with a final thought to mull over. If you are advising a board right now, overseeing a CEO transition, what's the one single metric, beyond just those generic employee morale surveys, that they should use to really gauge if the new CEO is succeeding in preserving psychological safety? What tactical measurement would truly prove it?
That's a tough one. Something tangible.
Something to think about. Thank you for joining us for the Deep Dive.